If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. We are in the heart of the propaganda for the war. We have Bill Maher discussing with Sam Harris how, why is the New York Times not pushing our war propaganda? Why aren't they talking about the Iran war like we do? Unbelievable. These people cannot even tolerate amongst their rank that there would be some hesitation at the idea of killing people for no reason at all, but to control their resources. Unbelievable. End of the line, Joel says, fast forward to 2027 when BB demands another intervention because country X is just 2 weeks away from a nuke. Yes, and this whole reinterpretation by Trump. Trump is saying, if we hadn't bombed Iran months ago for their nuclear site, we would have been bombed by nuclear weapons many months ago. Unbelievable to remake history like this, live in our face. There was no sign at the moment of the Fordow bombings that this was used in any way to produce a nuclear weapon, leaving aside the idea that it would be used within days after being created somehow. While we've been told for decades that Iran was going to get the nuclear weapons, somehow Trump was able to bomb just a few days before they were going to blow the whole world up. This is fiction. We live in the post-factual world. GM for the People says, winning accomplished, what a relief. WTI down from 118 in Asia this AM to 88 at the moment. I don't know, what is WTI? What does this abbreviation mean? The war in Iran is almost over, Trump said. In his opinion, the US-Israeli war with Iran is significantly ahead of schedule. I think the war is practically over. They have no fleet, no communications, no air force. Their missiles have been blown to pieces. Their drones are being destroyed everywhere. And in fact, in a speech, Trump said, the war is very complete. Pretty much. Which is quite stunning for when you think of George Bush, who had declared the end, I believe, in front of a boat, that was the end of the war to Afghanistan, I believe, 2 weeks in or something. And we were in Afghanistan for literally 15 years after that moment. Or maybe it was Iraq, I don't remember. But George W. Bush had declared the end of the war in front of a big military boat. It's over. We've done it. The problem is, what is the goal of your war? Because if the goal of your war is sustained change in a society, there's two paths. Either the goal of your war is to destabilize the nation. And then, okay, perhaps we destabilized Iran to an extent. If that is the goal of your war, yeah, it's accomplishable within a week of air raids, bombings, etc. But generally, it won't be durable, especially not with Iran, which is, as was pointed out by Professor Yang, Iran is a very decentralized society. Iran is able to operate without its head. In fact, Khamenei, the head of Iran, was probably, if you look at average, he was probably pulling Iran toward a less aggressive direction. He was probably a force of pacification of Iran compared to what you would have if one of his military commander is elevated at the head of the country, compared to what you would have if an average Iranian was elevated there. So it's like, okay, you chop the head of the nation. If you want to accomplish durable change in this nation, though, it becomes a matter of control. It's very easy to cause anarchy. This is true within societies and in geopolitics. Very easy to cause damage. It's much harder to control a direction of something. Anarchy is easy. That's the general rule. That's why disorder is anarchy and disorder, and it's all very easy to produce. That is why thieves can ruin. Thieves and, you know, petty criminals, they can ruin a society. If they're not in check, if the justice system or the police isn't into finding all of them and keeping them out of society, your society becomes extremely unviable. And Plapides, I want to address this. Because this is in line what you're saying with what Richard Anania was saying today, that Professor Yang is a propagandist, conspiracy theorist, that he doesn't make sense, it's all crazy. I have heard crazy stuff from Professor Yang. So Plapides says, don't tell me JF is swallowing Professor Yang's CPC propaganda. Oh, no. Well, first, I want a Chinese girlfriend. So I have to get into the Chinese culture. I have to be aware of Professor Yang's statement. That being said, I've heard Professor Yang say some crazy stuff, schizo stuff. I've also heard him make hours and hours of good analysis. So it's like, it's not very intelligent to just dismiss, he's a conspiracy theorist. Boom. I ignore everything he has to say. What did I just cite Professor Yang for saying? I cited him to say Iran is a very decentralized nation. He's right. I could cite him analyzing the Tehran. Professor Yang analyzes Iran as disposing of a elevated position. Very important. I hadn't fully realized this until I just watched a video of Professor Yang. So it's not because I may disagree with him on a given subject that on this he isn't right. And in fact, he deserves to be referenced and quoted, because whenever I drop an idea on this show here, I want to do my best to say, where does this ID come from? Because I could easily just tell you, oh yeah, here, come to JFG tonight. I'm going to tell you something about Iran, okay? It's a mountainous region with a very decentralized society. Now, I could do this without citing Professor Yang, and probably no one would notice, and I would be able to transmit the knowledge I've learned from him to you without getting the trouble of getting called out by you, Plapides. But I don't want to be that guy. I would rather acknowledge Professor Yang. Sometimes I believe, I think I remember weeks ago hearing stuff from him that wasn't super solid. But if he makes a two-hour expose, and it's like, okay, maybe there's a sentence or two I disagree with him on, but for the rest, he's analyzing factual analysis of the geography of Iran, actual analysis of the society of Iran, and he just states facts during these 2 hours. I'm not going to dismiss the whole thing as this is conspiracy. Conspiracy! No. So that's my analysis. Now, he had said some weird things about Frankist, I believe. He was using a lot of these euphemistic terms to talk about elite control. And there, see, I would disagree with him. Let's be honest about what's happening to society and who's controlling it. John Drake says, dude is definitely an anti-Western. His ideas are hit and miss, mostly miss. I mean, I don't know. I've watched a 2 hour, I watched it in diagonal. I really skipped through, but over 2 hours of what he had to say, what I saw, that's basically the only content that I ever watched from him. And I can't even say that I watched the whole 2 hours, but I skipped through it. And what I find is, okay, this guy has some good analysis of Terran stuff. It made me realize this is why Iran survives for so long. Like, it's very important, the fact that they are on a mountain. They are on a mountain, and the rest of the Middle East that is extremely oil-rich, they're all flat and low. So they have the position over the Strait of Hormuz that no one has. That is very important to understand. And even if it came from a deluded conspiracy theorist, it would still be true. Plapidus says, fair enough, JF, but I have listened to many of these analysts and they all follow the same pattern. Give many details, but ignore the overall system picture. Yeah, I mean, those are fair critiques, and I would join you. By the way, I have kind of a black eye. Don't be surprised. Maybe I have black eyes on two eyes. I don't know. I'm hurting in the face, and that's because yesterday my son was balancing himself on my knees, and he was like, ooh, ooh, boom. He gave me an accidental hit by the back of his head onto my face. And that was painful right in the eyes. I thought I would have a bigger damage around the eyes. It seems, aesthetically, it seems like not totally a black eye. But don't worry if you see this today. It is an accidental injury of parenting. Breaking, Putin and Trump held a one-hour phone call to discuss the wars in Iran and Ukraine. Putin pushed for a quick political settlement to the Iran war and told Trump Russian forces are making significant progress on the battlefield in Ukraine. The Kremlin described the call as serious and constructive. It's fascinating to me how Russia has basically dealt away Iran. Because about 1 or 2 years ago, I remember news reports that Russia was in discussion with Iran that they would form kind of a NATO, kind of an alliance where there would be a promise of allied help if Iran was bombed. I don't think that this deal ever made it into something official, but I had the impression from it that both Russia and China had certain interest in defending Iran. I mean, when you think about it, 15% of the oil of China, when you see those tanks of oil burning in the city in Iran, this is oil that would have gone to China in some form. And I'm always surprised to see that China is just there emitting diplomatic statements like, oh, international law is being violated. You guys are violating the sovereignty of Iran. Not kind. It's like, imagine if America... Let's say America was to, let's say that America is buying Albertan oil. And imagine China comes in and just starts bombing all of the oil in Alberta. and Alberta is on fire. Can you imagine how long the US would just stay there and just say, that's not very kind what you're doing to Alberta? I can't believe the passivity of these nations in front of what is obviously the whole problem with Iran has nothing to do with their religion, has nothing to do with Khamenei even. It has to do with the fact that it is a part of an alternative empire and of their enrichment and functioning. It is a functional part of the Chinese empire, basically, and Russia to an extent. That's the problem that Trump takes with Iran. That's their only crime. But then if you won't let Russia have some degree of interaction or control over Ukraine, if you won't let China have some degree of benefiting from Iran, then what you're effectively saying is that the entire planet, except this, the tight border of Russia and the tight border of China, belongs to the U.S. empire. This is where I take issue with all of this. Stacey White says, a few years ago, China opened up a school focusing on studying our greatest allies' strategies to conquer Western nations via subversion. Yang is an example of applying this knowledge. Absolutely. John Drake says they don't have a defense agreement. They aren't allies legally. I understand. But there were discussions, and so I thought, even if it doesn't get officialized, it shows some degree of care, some interest of Russia or China in protecting Iran. But they're just letting it go. Amazing. Now, it's possible that the philosophy of China, Russia, and internally within Iran, it's possible that their philosophy is, you know what, they can blow up whatever they want, and then we can let them win, let them go out in bravado, and all we'll have incurred are some damages, and then we'll rebuild. Maybe they think as long as they don't do ground invasion, we're good. So perhaps it's the red line. As long as America just pounds with bombs, it's possible that they don't care about it. As I've said before, life is cheap. In these countries, you know, everything can be rebuilt. Everything that's there is crap already. So it's like, okay, we can rebuild cisterns. We can repump more oil. So it's possible that for them, it's actually damage that they're willing to take in without much response. Because perhaps in the end, what they see long term is if America doesn't do a ground invasion, we're good. We're going to be able to continue the oil flow, and we don't have to respond. We don't have to create deterrence of any kind. Of course, the next generation of people who will take power in Iran, if it is let to be without intervention by Trump, they will be much more radical than Khamenei, I would expect, if Iran takes its natural direction. And they would be legitimately so, because they would have seen the last leader be literally just assassinated arbitrarily by US and Israel. So it's like, don't come to me in surprise if in 20 years from now, Iran did get the nuclear bomb, maybe by buying it from outside, maybe by making a supply deal with some other country. It's like they would have all the reasons to want it, knowing that their leaders are serially assassinated by a country that wants to overtake their sovereignty. Stacey White says, I would like to hear JF analyze why Carney is stealing a majority right now. I wonder how much this has to do with ops in the Middle East. First, I wouldn't say necessarily based on I think you're talking about a survey. I've seen that survey. Surveys can be deceptive, and we don't know what would be the result of a completely new election being triggered by Carney. But certainly, Carney has been doing the right thing to relead a winning Liberal Party. Now, I'm not saying that he made me a Liberal. I will never be. But you observe his strategy, and his strategy is much less divisive than the woke left. So basically what Carney is doing in Canada is he's taking the victories of Trudeau with the old boomer woman and the far-left radical youth. So that's secured. So what does Carney do? He makes a move to the center because he knows he's not gonna readily lose the progress made on his extremist front by Justin Trudeau. But he realizes that if he is to develop a winning Liberal Party, not one that is constantly stuck in divided power, minority governments, etc., stuff that Justin Trudeau was faced with, he has to kind of open up to a true centrist, worker-based type of appeal. And he has even done stuff, to be honest and to his credit, he has even done stuff to appease Alberta. So even the conservatives, it's not that Alberta will start voting Liberal for it, but he has been treating Danielle Smith and his negotiation on the carbon tax, for example. He has been removing some of the harsh carbon tax that Justin Trudeau had put in place, which are literally theft of Albertans, okay? Because the carbon tax, if you want the short of it, it's like, oh, let's define how the Albertans live as bad and let's tax it. And then let's let the rest of the provinces, whatever they do, that's fine. So it's like literally just a tax on Albertans. And he has removed it to a point where it's not noticeable on my gas bill. I pay much less every month since Carney is in. Now, please don't clip this and say JF is now a Liberal. But so if you want my analysis on Carney, he's doing very clever stuff because he knows that the eternal squeeze of the Liberal Party to a minority government, because they were having trouble. What Justin Trudeau has trouble with is that his extremist base is never quite satisfied, which is why they still vote NDP, even no matter how woke he went, they still voted NDP. So it's like, if you're going to lose some of these votes at some point, you have to accept it. And then you have to develop, if you want strategically, my opinion, for the Liberal Party, they want to develop a centrist Bill Clinton style of governance. So not woke, implicitly almost like pro-white, almost. And you don't want to welcome in your party all of this woke stuff because anyways, the woke, they are not that much, the true far-left woke, they are not that much of a strong force. And it's like much of them will vote Liberal anyways because they're not that extremist. And so Carney kind of is counting on the fact that his far left flank is secured, or whatever the NDP steals, they can steal, but it's too costly to go there. And he sees rather the opportunity that by moving center, he can expand the power of the Liberal Party by doing stuff that is pleasing to everyone, even conservatives. I mean, we do feel a relief to an extent. First, my gas bill is almost cut in half. Boom. Trudeau, Carney. Suddenly, I don't pay $400 a month to heat in the height of the winter. I pay $200, sometimes even less. So it's like, wow. That doesn't make me want to vote for Carney, but I'm sure that it's appreciated. Stacy White says, but Pierre learned from his loss and he's taking an assertive Canada first position, standing up to Trump while maintaining a desire to have a trade partnership with America. If Pierre could frame Carney as an American wannabe and Trump bootlicker, he would repress the boomer lib vote. Well, that would be a bad strategy. So what Carney is doing is very clever. He is saying, because America is not popular at all. It's never been. The U.S. has never been popular with Canadians. But more and more, as the U.S. has engaged into more aggressive worldwide intervention and, you know, attacks on the sovereignty of nations, the U.S. is really, really hated at this point by Canadians. So unless a small minority of military-minded neocon types of Canadian may not be included in this, but vastly, Canadians feel sovereign and separate from the U.S. And this has been developed, I would say, progressively over the last 20 years, because there was a time where we were joining the U.S. in wars, even symbolically, by sending like 2,000 soldiers or something like this. It was like the Afghanistan war, I think, and then we didn't go in Iraq. So slowly there was a, we're always with America, to, well, we're not here on this one, to, well, officially our position is that America, that the U.S. is violating international law and it's bad what they're doing. So that progression is a happy progression as far as I'm concerned on the side of Canada. And Carney is cleverly basically articulating that point, but not going further than this. Basically being open to collaboration with the U.S. while also saying that these actions are unacceptable. Gaza is unacceptable. Iran is unacceptable. Lapides says there is hardly any difference between liberal and conservative policy, both anti-Canada. Well, definitely the spread of Canadian politics is is very small. There is not much play, which is why Carney's moves are so clever. It's because it's very easy to steal the edge that Pierre Poilievre could have, that the conservatives could have. It's very easy to essentially mirror the opponent and steal the center. That is absolutely doable. And we've been talking about this principle in the U.S. too. The parties constantly do this. Dominate more of the center by copying the other side, because the other side isn't extreme enough, therefore easily copyable. But in Canada, that's basically the entirety of the political spectrum, because nothing is ever extreme in Canada. Roz Alert says, reports indicate that the U.S. has intercepted encrypted communications believed to be from Iranian officials that allegedly discuss activating sleeper cells across Western countries, including within the United States. According to early intelligence reports, the messages were intercepted by U.S. intelligence agencies and are now being analyzed, with federal authorities closely monitoring the situation. I don't even know if that's true. You know, what did you find? I mean, if I was to coordinate sleeper cell agents across the world, I would make sure that my encryption is not easily decrypted. But it looks like what you caught is maybe some Discord messages, some chatter. It looks like this is not as serious as presented, and not as official as presented. Now, it's possible that some communications of that sort are happening between terrorist cells or extremists. But I think that what this is mostly is actually preparation for a psy up. This is meant to, down the line, if there is ever a guy, a crazy guy out there who does some terrorist action, they want to pin it on the Iranian regime. So they're setting that up by publishing right now in the news. We are detecting this intelligence. We have de-encrypted this stuff. And they want to make it so that in a week, when you're rando, schizo Muslim in some lost country of the US kills someone with a butter knife, that's Iran. I believe this is what we're being prepared for here. Sometimes information is meant to prepare the stage for the future. That is very noticeable. They prepare the stage. Stacy White says, I strongly suspect Carney and Trump coordinated the 51st state narrative to steal the election. If Albertans can keep the UCP grassroots and provincial level, that province is the future and our best hope. Definitely. Alberta is a healthy society. I have seen it myself moving here. What a beautiful world. What a sensical society. Well-built, welcoming, beautiful. And the humans are just more pleasant. The humans here are not as... I don't hate them as much as the rest of the humans out there. Eric Olofsson sends a super chat. Let's have a look at what he says.
Both Israel and Iran are becoming more radicalized demographically, with extremist factions growing. Public pressure often favors war, while leaders act as a restraint, the opposite of the US, where elites tend to support war more than the public.
That's very interesting. That's a very interesting observation. The U.S. is a funnel toward the middle. And the middle, of course, slides toward the left. But the U.S., the population kind of funnels itself in the non-extremism. And you're right. What an observation. The elites of the U.S. are more radical, more violent, more warmongering than the population itself. That is true. And it is also true that extremism in Israel and in Iran is growing from the base population. That is, in Israel, it doesn't take a dishonest government to wage unjust wars. It's like, no, to an extent, the government is really truly expressing the voice of the people. And the reality is, if you go in Israel, you will see people at the bottom of society. They are even more radical than Benjamin Netanyahu. Some of them, groups, religious groups, are advocating for the torture of prisoners and saying it should be legal. Just legalize the rape of prisoners, as long as they're not Jewish. Marby Dog says, American elites also eat babies. Fair point, fair point. Do they, though? Do they really do that? Because I've heard this one many times, especially in the last 2 weeks. But is this true? Cyber Genius says, hello, love your content. All right, thank you very much for the compliment. Thank you for the donation, Eric. Iran hits Tel Aviv, leaving multiple cars damaged. So, yeah, there is some degree of strikes over Tel Aviv. However, it is greatly, greatly exaggerated. So some of the images that you see out there are completely fake. This is not a current bombardment of Iran, yet I've seen major X accounts constantly pushing this, retweeting it, quote tweeting it. See how Israel is getting whooped by Iran. And you see these big salvos of missile. this is false. So it's one of the most regular video that I see out there. It's probably a bunch of videos that come from a collection from 2025 in the Salvo exchange between Iran and Israel. But this is creating a false impression. The false impression that Iran is strongly reacting to the attacks. As far as we can tell, and as far as I can tell, Iran may have sent a couple of missiles that were not intercepted. There is some damage that is confirmed, but it is relatively small damage. There wasn't a big destabilization of Israel society as a result, and it is really minor replies that we're seeing from the side of Iran. So it's like, it's very important to know the state of reality. Because when you have these people who are pro-Iran just cheering on fake made-up videos or old videos from 2025, creates a false impression of the balance of power in this fight. Asin says, the chat got disconnected, but I'm back. So it seems we have not lost connections. Trump was responding to a nonsense accusations that he's done, because it's widely believed that the US or Israel just bombed a school of young girls in Iran. And there's no reason to believe that this would have been done by Iran, especially given that this happened within the exact time at which the US was bombarding Iran. And Trump, you know how he likes to hyperbole, and he lets his hyperbole make him lie. Trump, in a discussion a few days ago with a journalist, said they bombed it themselves with their Tomahawk missiles. Iran has missiles. They bombed the girls' school. And it's like, you're going to make me believe that while the U.S. was just bombarding Iran, a sudden idea of Iran was to send a missile onto a young elementary girl's school. That's very unlikely. Like, why would they do that? And if they did that, why would they do that at the very same time you were bombing them? It does look like your planes dropped a missile on a girl's school. It does look like it. Now, for the first time since this crazy claim of Trump, we have a journalist questioning him on it and pushing a little bit.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Hi, Mr. President. You just suggested that Iran somehow got its hands on a Tomahawk and bombed its own elementary school on the first day of the war. But you're the only person in your government saying this, even your defense.
Very important point by the journalist. No one else, not even the Department of War, official voices, ministers, whatever. Trump is the only one who claims Iran bombed their own school with an American missile. With an American missile. They got a hold, while we were bombarding them, they somehow found an American missile, or they had one in store, and they used that exact moment to bombard themselves more.
Secretary wouldn't say that when he was asked, standing over your shoulder on your plane on Saturday. Why are you the only person saying this?
Because I just don't know enough about it. I think.
Now, Trump says he doesn't know enough about it. That's very different from the 3 days ago. They bombed their own school. They bombed it. They did it. Oh, yeah, they chop baby heads. That's what they do. We are very far from that statement. Now, Trump doesn't know. And when a journalist says, why did you say that? Trump says, because I don't know. So because you don't know, you said it was Iran. Normally, when you don't know, you don't say so. You don't say anything.
I think it's something that I was told is under investigation, but tomahawks are.
So see the sliminess of his speech? This is what happens when you lie. I think I was told. So he's kind of framing it so that you think maybe he was told that it was them firing their own school. But now he realizes, well, that's another lie. I think I was told, but I wasn't told that. I actually lied. So he completes with, I think I was told. Let's listen to the exact wording here. I think I was told.
I think it's something that I was told is under investigation.
I think it's something that I was told is under investigation. So now he was told nothing. But he claims something publicly. He made those claims without knowing, and even with knowing that this was under investigation. And it's under investigation for what? For the idea that this could be an intentional strike by the army, by the American army, or an accidental strike by the American army. But no one seriously thinks that Iran self-bombed with a Tomahawk missile. Doubting Thomas says, JF, why is there so much more effective narrative control in this war rather than with Gaza? Are they just learning their lessons, or is there something fundamentally different? Well, there is something fundamentally different, and it is that American actions are in play. Now, we all know that the genocide of Gaza was made possible by the U.S., but it was made without direct U.S. actions. And so the narrative control of Gaza was totally in the hands of the Israeli, which are a less equipped society. No matter how much control they have over intelligence, and yes, they are trying to gather data with authentics and that kind of stuff. So yes, they are trying to be a psyop superpower. But they aren't there yet as much as the U.S. is. So the reason there's so much narrative control is that the U.S. PSYOP machine is very old. So when a president makes a decision like Trump did with Iran, he deploys these assets. He deploys all of the assets that will make sure that you will get these patriot accounts on X saying, hell yeah, America, fuck yeah. So they didn't benefit from this propaganda machine when they did Gaza, because that was a purely Israeli action, despite with U.S. support, of course. But see how the U.S. was trying to kind of make it less worse by saying, oh, we'll send boats, we'll send aid. We'll try to move the population elsewhere. So the U.S. was there as an accessory, and they weren't in control of so much of the propaganda as they are in the Iran case. Now, there are many factors that make the campaign pro-Iran, the pro-Iran propaganda very weak compared to Gaza. So in Gaza, what did you have? You have actual videos of people suffering. We see barely any on the side of Iran. So on the side of Iran, it's a society that is less prepared for social media propaganda ops. Gaza, somehow, they probably had mastered this. I don't know if they were coached or if they were under help of some kind. But for example, when Iran sends missile salvos, what you have in the pro-Iran accounts on X is they will film the missile being sent. Now, I believe that the American war machine has understood for a long time that it's not enough to get the sending of the missile. You have to show the target. That's something that the Iranians are not capable of. But the U.S. will give you that. You know, we see a lot of videos that appear to be filmed of Iran strikes. So we have, let's say, these cameras over the city of Tehran, and you see the strikes. Now, the U.S. propaganda machine pushes these videos forwards and says, look, we destroyed these terrorists. Okay, so at least that's, you've shown the target and you build a narrative around it. Iran is incapable of doing this because really they're incapable of shooting. An Iranian missile is not very precise. So when they send missiles to Israel, all they have is the missile leaving the site. Why can't they film where it lands? Because they don't know where it lands. Because they're stupid. That's the whole story of the failure of the. That's why we end up with AI videos and fake videos coming from 2025, making us believe that it's from 2026. It's because they have nothing. They don't know where they shoot. They don't have a precise capability to control the landing points. So they're really just, they're down to either we send a lot of missiles and it creates general chaos, but it's not targeted damage. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, why is there so much more effect? Oh, this one, this was the question I was answering. Ships are reportedly crossing the Strait of Hormuz. They are reportedly turning off their transponders before passing through and switch them back on afterwards. So you can see ships are disappearing from the tracking. And then some of them are trying to pass, some of them are coming back. But it seems that some of them might be succeeding at passing, and they are reopening their transponders while they are on the other side. So perhaps there is some degree of a failure for Iran to be able to neutralize this passage. It's hard to know. And it's hard to know whether turning off their transponder, is it truly allowing them to go undercover in a way that the Iranians have more difficulty targeting them? Perhaps. K7 says, then how did they target the billion-dollar radar systems? All I know, I don't know about this radar system. All I know is when evaluating the damages of Iranian strikes, they don't look very precise. They don't look like they were targeted at something. They look like they fall at random, literally. It's like you see as much blown up empty asphalt spot, empty parking spot, as you see actual building receiving missiles. And you're like, when you calculate in your head the kind of probabilistic landscape, you're like, oh yeah, well, pretty much Iran is shooting not toward a specific target, but more like toward a city. They're more like, let's shoot in the general direction of this city. GM for the People says, Saul Mercogliano was saying the Greek merchant mariners, tankers, will go dark and run the straits. Loads of money if you can make the Kessel run in under 15 parsecs. Also, now we're interested at the talented shipman that can pass quick. I understand. That makes total sense. If you're a company and you're waiting on your important delivery, and it's like, wow, if he stays there for too long, if he goes too slow, he's going to get shot and we'll lose all of our stock. We have here an anti-Semitic attack in France. People have been laughing their ass off because you'll see this guy is Jewish. He's coming to annoy protesters that are, I don't know, they're protesting against war. And you will absolutely simulate a false attack. You will see it in live. So, So no one touched him. No one attacked him. No one disrupted his posture or equilibrium. But suddenly, all of a sudden, as people are just filming him, as he's making public statements, he goes into a rage. Ah, ah, I'm being attacked. Oh, he was affected by a telepathic attack. He's even faking some kind of injury. It's unbelievable. I mean, this is so profound. Someone was saying this is like 50 years of history. Someone was saying this on Twitter. 50 years of history in a single clip. If we didn't have cameras to the degree we have, it's amazing how much we wouldn't know just how deluded people are. People create false narratives. And this guy, if you go back to the age where there were no cell phones and cameras, this guy goes to the local police station and records a complaint for an assault. And then you have the ADL down the line saying, oh, we have 10,000 assaults against Jewish people in the last month. Well, here's one of them. Here's one of them. That's how much we get to know thanks to cell phones and cameras. That's what it looks like. Now, another moment captured on camera magically is, and this is, those are the gamblings of the liberal world. It's like at some point your society accumulates enough contradictions that two contradictory things will happen in the exact same video. So this is a guy who's yelling with a speakerphone and saying, "We accept everyone. We accept diversity." Now, while he's yelling that also, a Islamic terrorist comes in his back, uses his back to propulse himself and throw a bomb. So watch it, because it all happens very quick.
We were born and raised in New York, and we want everyone here to stay in New York. You don't get to come from outside and then tell everyone else.
He was making a pro-diversity speech. We are from New York. We all belong here. Diversity is okay. And he gets a terrorist behind him throwing a bomb. And in fact, he then reacted publicly, but instead of denunciating the terrorist act, he denunciated the other side. So this is the implicit collaboration between liberalism and terrorism and criminality. They're not really annoyed at criminality. They're annoyed at the counter-protesters that were on the other side. And they are more afraid of non-criminal whites with their political IDs than they are about actual crime. I was in the middle of saying, as a born and raised New Yorker, we welcome everyone into this city, when he threw that over my head. Well, it's not just he threw that over your head. It's that he was a part of your group and a part of the very people you were defending on the speakerphone. And I still stand by it. As a born and raised New Yorker, everyone is welcome. Everyone except Chief Goatfucker Jake Lang. So all of this was in response to this Jake Lang guy who is, I don't know, he's a suspicious character in my view. Not someone I trust particularly, but His presence in New York apparently led to this extremely hilarious contradiction on screen. Jake Lang has been saying a lot of trollish stuff, a lot of extreme stuff that doesn't seem like it doesn't come from his heart, or I don't know what he's trying to do. I tend to just not care about him. He's someone who is, I believe, if I understand correctly what he is a Jew who acts like a white nationalist. I don't know if it's a skit. I don't know if it's a joke. He is saying extremely offensive stuff. I don't have a big opinion of him other than it's weird what's happening in there. It's very weird. Sam Harris has never recovered from the idea that people might have differing opinions that are worth sharing. So Sam Harris, for 10 years, he's been talking about one thing and one thing only. He is shocked that people can talk about truths that he finds uncomfortable. He is shocked that his lie by omission of his whole career of not engaging on themes like identity, of not wanting to engage when it comes to the fact that his philosophies are designed and thought of to defend Israeli interests. And he's asking us to not believe that. He's asking us to not point the elephant in the room of the fact that it seems that his entire philosophical system is entirely motivated by the ethnic principles that he must defend, that he is paid to defend, and that he is supported to defend, and that he defends constantly. Andy, thank you very much, LDR, for the donation. And so for 10 years, Sam Harris has not been producing interesting philosophy. He's been mostly engaging in how is it possible that X, that Elon leaves all of these people speak on X? How is it possible that Joe Rogan has guests like Martyr Maid? So he has become strictly a thinker of the deplatforming world. Just completely stunned at the fact that at some moment in the history of American civilization, finally, the First Amendment was actually respected. Thanks to Elon's sacrifice of enormous amounts of money. Thanks to Joe Rogan being kind of courageous on certain guest choices. And he talks of how this broke the friendship between him and Joe Rogan.
I feel like some of my socializing with people who either were odious or later turned out to be odious corrupted my being able to respond in real time to what they were doing to our culture. Joe Rogan was a friend. He's somebody who I made many efforts to maintain as a friend. I think he's done a tremendous amount of harm, which I didn't comment on for a long time because he was a friend, and I couldn't figure out how to touch it until I thought, okay, I just have to talk about this. Honestly, I don't think he's a friend anymore because I've tried to privately engage him, and it hasn't worked out.
Well, that's on him.
Yeah, but I feel like there's something.
So he tried to do what exactly every Jewish guest of Joe Rogan has tried to do, which is, why are you inviting these people, Joe? Why not just us? Why aren't you just inviting us? Why are you inviting Martyr Maid? Tucker, why are you inviting Candace? Charlie Kirk, why are you letting Candace speak? Why are you letting Tucker speak? Every time this is what they asked for, and it's what Sam Harris asked for. And Douglas Murray did the same thing, trying to discredit the idea of any important show being a place where free ideas can be shared, even if they are disagreed with by Jewish intellectuals. Sam Harris isn't different. They are all interested in creating a circle of trust in which they are the only ones defined as being right, and the alternatives cannot rise. Oh, let them speak on their little club in front of five people. That's free speech. But don't let them speak on Joe Rogan.
I mean, you and I have, I mean, we have friends, but we also have a job to do, right? And exactly. It's hard to do it if you're just schmoozing with Gaddafi.
And now, and now Joe Rogan is accused of having a relationship with Gaddafi. Sadi Edward says censorship in the absence of is the absence of argument. Yes. That's what they've been demanding, basically. Depersonify, dehumanize anyone who happens to have an opinion, even if it's justified in facts. You know, vaccines, anti-vaccine opinions are legitimate. They are grounded in facts. They are grounded at least in a questioning of the quality of the experimentation. Did Joe Rogan ever invite Gaddafi? Did Joe Rogan ever speak to Gaddafi? I don't know. I've seen a meme of Gaddafi invited to Joe Rogan. But no, no, it's confirmed by AI. Joe Rogan has never spoken with Muammar Gaddafi. I've seen memes. So already here, I've seen fake memes of, oh yeah, let's invite the dictators of this world. But Sam Harris is buying into the meme here. Farzin P says, Sticks update. Why are you guys constantly asking me about Sticks? Last time you guys asked about him, I went to his YouTube channel and he was there chilling and drunk and missing a tooth. On his bed. So it's like, it looks like Styx is doing great. It looks like Styx is Styx. What's the news update you want? Styx is being Styx on a bed. Those are literally the last news available about Styx. Matt Walsh was doing a hilarious recap of what happened in the Jeff Epstein case. So just to recap, a prison guard who lied to the authorities about checking on Epstein also coincidentally made a series of deposits in the weeks leading up to his death that were so suspicious that the bank independently reported them to the police. The same prison guard was searching for news about Epstein in the moments before his death, and that same guard was independently named by inmates who claimed that she was involved in covering up the killing. Also, two cameras in front of Epstein's cell malfunctioned while all of this was happening. That's a whole lot of coincidences stacking up on top of each other. I don't know. Seems strange to me, but I'm no detective. This is true. There's all these weird circumstances around the death of Epstein. And those are still not resolved in my mind. Those bank warnings did happen. Did we investigate further? You're stuck with the problem that I don't know that the government truly wants to know. I don't know that there's truly political pressure to actually search this. But I covered this, 2 years ago. That yes, there were these weird bank transfers that happened leading up to the death of Epstein that targeted one or two prison guards. And they apparently bought motorcycles with the money.
Atheism is unstoppable. Heroes are having a tough time. Dawkins sees his atheism being bred out of the population. Sam Harris devolved into very basic tribalism.
Yes, basically new atheism was meant to fall, not sustainable. Because when you think about the horsemen and what they truly were, it's very interesting because they were coming at it. They were coming at atheism for various reasons. I think that for Sam Harris, it's very obvious. It's to detach himself from his ethnicity. So by adopting atheism, and very often I have Sam Harris fans coming back to me with this argument. Like, what do you say? Why do you say he doesn't talk with people he disagrees with? He keeps talking to people who believe in God. Is that, well, you're buying the red herring here. The whole idea that Sam Harris is an atheist is the unimportant thing. The fact that Sam Harris constantly defends Israeli interest in the opposition to the Muslim world, that's the important point. So when I say Sam Harris doesn't engage with the critique, Sam Harris engages with all sorts of critiques on the stuff that he uses as red herrings, on the stuff that's not truly important to him. But notice that Sam Harris will never engage on two subjects, will never have a true intelligent opponent speaking to him on these subjects: race or Israel and the Muslim world. Now, when he talks about these subjects, it is under extremely controlled circumstances, and he closes the window of acceptability, and he doesn't engage with intelligent opponents. Yes, TLDR, Sam Harris would never debate Daniel Akikaju, exactly, or me, or Stefan Molyneux, you know, and even Stefan Molyneux wouldn't be, like, he rejected Stefan Molyneux on the basis that what, he was 4 degrees of connections away from David Duke. So those are guilt by association arguments of the kind that only can build a censorship and deplatforming system. They want to create a world in which you have a massive social cost to pay. You'll never be on Joe Rogan if you think that. And they want to be the only one on Joe Rogan. That's what we're faced with. Extreme desire to cut the success of others, which is ultimately anti-American and anti-free speech. Last news item, this is liberalism in a nutshell. Polymarket announces woman driving for Uber can now opt out of picking up male passengers. This is the beauty of far leftism. So they will tell you that they are against discrimination. They will start by trying to keep everyone from discriminating against everyone else. They'll realize that doesn't work. And now they will reallow discrimination, but only on protected classes. Which is why liberalism is synonymous with anti-whiteness and anti-maleness. So, let's stop discrimination. Oh, well, women want to discriminate against male clients. Oh, well, that's discrimination. Well, but they need to protect themselves, don't they? Oh, yeah, they need to protect themselves. Now, women are allowed to refuse a client because they're male. The problem is, if you acknowledge that there is a legitimate reason to protect oneself from a category, why wouldn't males be capable also of wanting to protect themselves from that category. What you're saying is, you know, females are legitimately believing at times that they are in danger with male clients. Okay. So now we're going to give them the right to discriminate against male clients. But if male clients are a danger to the driver, wouldn't we want the ability for Uber driver males to protect themselves from this danger? And ultimately, liberalism ends up only allowing the discrimination in the sense that they like. So they believe in discrimination. They believe in racism and they believe in sexism. They just want to allow the one-way sexism against male and the one-way racism against whites. ELDR says a beautiful sentence with which I conclude, the point of a system is what it does.